form of hymns and mantras constitutes my body. Spiritual activities and ecstatic emotions are my actual form. The ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices improperly conducted are the various limbs of my body. The unseen good fortune proceeding from pious or spiritual activities constitutes my mind. And the demigods who execute my orders in various departments of my life and soul. Sometimes atheists argue that since God is invisible to their eyes, they do not believe in God. For them, the Supreme Lord is describing a method by which one can see God in his impersonal form. Intelligent persons can see God in his personal form, as stated in the Shastras. But if one is very eager to see the Supreme Personality of God immediately, face to face, he can see the Supreme Lord through this description, which portrays the various internal and external parts of this body. To engage in tapasya, or denial of material activities, is the first principle of spiritual life. Then there are spiritual activities, such as the performance of daily ritualistic sacrifices, study of the Vedic knowledge, meditation on the Supreme Personality of God, and chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. One should also respect the demigods and understand how they are situated, how they act, and how they manage the activities of the various departments of this material world. In this way, one can see how God is existing, and how everything is managed perfectly because of the presence of the Supreme Lord. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9:10, Maya Pyakshina Prakriti Suryate Sacharachara This material world is working under my direction, O Sattva-kunti, and it is producing all moving and moving beings. By its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. If one is unable to see the Supreme Lord, although he is present as Krishna in his various incarnations, one may see the Supreme Lord's impersonal according to the direction of the Vedas by seeing the activities of the nature. Anything done under the direction of the Vedic injunctions is called karma, as described by the order carrier Yamaraj, which is called 6.1.4. Veda pralikito karma kheda marastha vivaryaya Vedo narayana saksha swayam. That which is prescribed in the Vedas constitutes the dharma. The religious principles are the opposite of that of the spirit. The Vedas are directed to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, and are self-born. Thus we have heard from the Yamaraja. In this connection, Sri Madhvacharya comments, Karo Vayu Chitta Kartavo Brahmadya Sveshu Devata. The various demigods are all acting under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and according to their various actions, the demigods are taking the names. Kapo Meng Kayam Kamas Manu Vidya Kriyat Gari Kabo Jato Dhamma My dear Brahmana, austerity in the form of meditation is my heart. Vedic knowledge in the form of hymns and mantras constitutes my body. And spiritual activities and ecstatic emotions are my actual form. The ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices when properly conducted are the various limbs of my body. The unseen good fortune proceeding from pious or spiritual activities constitutes my mind. The demigods who execute my orders in various departments of my mind and soul. Prabhupada comments that this is an impersonal description of my home. In other words, how to see that the various energies of the Lord, which are working under his direction, can be seen as various limbs or parts of the Lord's internal and external features. It's metaphorical. So this is the impersonal feature. This is impersonal in God. It is not Krishna directly that is seen in this way, but rather his energies as they are working. And he says, for example, this says the other descriptions of the universal form. The rivers are his veins, the hills and mountains are his bones, vegetation, the trees and the hairs on his body, and so on. This is a way that a materialist who cannot see the personal nature of the Lord directly can yet meditate on it. It's an authorized form of meditation on Krishna. But it's impersonal in the sense that this is not Krishna's spiritual form, but rather meditation on him as if he were his energies. So it's a metaphor. But what is seen by this meditation is how everything is working under the control and direction of Krishna. And so from various angles, you're getting at the super soul. So that conception of the soul of the universe arises. So it's a way of meditating on the external features of the super soul through the activity of the energies of the soul. This verse begins, Tapo me hridaya. That tapo, austerity, is my heart. And these same words are used by Krishna elsewhere. That's what I thought I'd talk about this morning. Tapo me hridaya. In Canto 2, Chapter 9, Text 23, Tapo me hridaya saksha. Lord Krishna here is speaking to Lord Brahma. Prajadishtra maya tatra tvayi karma vimukti tapo me hridayam saksha atmaham tapasomaya. O sinless Brahma, you may know for me that it was I who first ordered you to undergo penance when you were perplexed in your duty. Such penance is my heart and soul. Tapo me hridayam saksha. And therefore penance and I are no different. This statement is made by the Lord to Brahma at the very beginning of the universe. It is described that Brahma takes birth on the lotus flower. He is the first created being. So he finds himself in the middle of the darkness of the universe, all by himself, sitting on a lotus flower. Lotus springs from the navel of Narvadakshayanishtha. So it's not a monetary lotus. And it opens up and there is Brahma. This is the method of conception. So Brahma is born with full intelligence, full of the urge to create, but he doesn't know what's going on. Do I have to sit here, darkness all around? Who am I? How did I get here? What am I supposed to be doing here? Which is actually the situation of anybody. So Brahma observed that he was sitting on the lotus flower, and that this lotus flower was situated on the stem. On the stem disappeared into the darkness beneath him. So he climbed down the stem of the lotus flower, thus showing the search for his origin. But he wasn't able to proceed all the way down. Something stopped him. But he heard, coming from the darkness, actually from the primordial waters, the syllables da, pa, which is like that, da, pa, which means austerity. And in this way, he received the order of Vishnu. He took it. This was the message that came when he was hitting at this origin. He took it as an order. Climbed back up, situated himself in the lotus flower, and performed meditation and devotional service for 1,000 years of the demigods. At the end of that, says here, that the Lord shook hands with him. He appeared before Brahma and he shook his hands. So this way, he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Brahma is the founder of all Sampradaya. So this is the aboriginal, primordial act of becoming Krishna conscious. That's different here in Brahma's activity. So the importance of this tapa by penance is by following this order, tapa, penance, that Brahma became. Like it. So the Lord said to him when he saw Brahma, he said, O Brahma, impregnate me with it. That's Brahma saying, Vedagaro, I'm very much pleased with your long accumulated penance with the desire for creation. Hardly am I pleased with the pseudo mystics. I wish you good luck. He said, Varam Maraya, I'm very hard to translate in English. May all blessings be upon you. I wish you good luck. O Brahma, you may ask of me, the giver of all benedictions, all that you may desire. You may know that the ultimate benediction, as the result of all penances of the Tapasya, is to see me by realization. The highest perfection of ingenuity, says, is the personal perception of my abodes. And this has been possible because of your submissive attitude and the performance of severe penance according to my order. And Brahma says, the highest perfectional stage of life is to know the Lord by actual perception, by the grace of the Lord. And then Brahma says, this can be attained by everyone who is willing to discharge service to the Lord, enjoying in the revealed scriptures that are standard and accepted by the bona fide charters of spiritual pastors. So it's a simple thing. Probably here's the goal, the highest perfection today, to see the Lord directly by realization through the grace. And he said, everyone can attain it. How? Simple thing. To discharge the act of devotional service to the Lord as enjoined in the revealed scriptures that are standard and accepted by the Holy Father Child. So it's a very simple thing. There's no big perplexity of what their goal is, nor how to achieve it. We don't have to enter into a lot of complicated speculation or understanding. Prabhupada explains, he explains Bhagavad Gita and such literature as proved by all the acharyas. In that Bhagavad Gita, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, asks that one always be mindful of him, always be in his devotee, always worship the calmly, and always bow down before the Lord. And by so doing, one is sure to go back home, back to Godhead, without any doubt. In other places also, the same order is there, that one give up all other engagements and fully surrender unto the Lord without hesitation. And the Lord will give such a devotee all protection, because what makes us hesitate is wonder about how we will be protected. These are the secrets of attaining the highest perfection of saints. And there it is, Prabhupada bestows the deeds. You want to know how to do it? This is how. And then you see the examples there. Lord Brahma exactly followed these principles without any superiority complex. That is, accepting the position of the servant. Thus he attained the highest perfection of stage of experiencing the vote of the Lord, and the Lord himself performed his prayer. That's how it's done. If one is unwilling to follow this process, then of course, can I expect to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the Lord? These things will always be elusive, and that person will have so many doubts and misgiving. But here, seen by actual perception, this is what Prabhupada means by realized knowledge, by actual perception. It says in the Bhagavad Gita 9th chapter, Pratyaksha Avagama. It's directly before the eyes. Prabhupada tells us that knowledge means information that is contained in the Vedas. So here we have some of this information from the working slide of what his ability is, what's there. So this is knowledge because it is information that is contained in the Vedas. And Prabhupada says, it is scientific knowledge because the candidate realizes this by his own experience. So that word scientific, when we claim science of self-realization, science of Krishna consciousness, is not just that we're trying to latch on to the reputation of material science, but here there's a practical meaning to this word science. Prabhupada uses that word, practical, when he says Krishna consciousness is practical. Then it is, the subject matter is directly perceived by the candidate through the performance of Krishna consciousness. But what is the means? This is this posterity. So that's what, after this, now Krishna goes on. O sinless Brahma, you may know from me that it was I who first ordered you to undergo penance. Here Krishna said, the word stapa, it came from me. When you are perplexed in your duty, such penance is my heart and soul. Therefore, penance and I are none different. Prabhupada said, the penance by which one can see the personality of Godhead face to face is to be understood as devotional service to the Lord and nothing else. Because only by discharging devotional service in transcendental love can one approach the Lord. Such penance is the internal potency of the Lord and is none different. As soon as there is austerity or penance and devotional service, immediately becomes in the or under the internal potency. When there is activity for sense gratification, we are under the control of the external potency. Our constitutional position is to be controlled at all times. That's our nature. We can never be the controller. We're controlled because we're Jiva Tattva. Jiva Tattva, we're under control of superior force. That superior force is the energy of Krishna. That energy comes from two varieties, external and internal. So our limited freedom is we can choose which energy we want to be controlled by. We don't have the freedom not to be controlled by the superior force of Krishna. But our freedom is we can be controlled by the internal potency or by the external potency. In either case, we receive orders. When we're in the internal potency, we receive orders from Krishna, either directly like Brahma here or through his agent, followed by the spiritual master. When I act on those orders, then I'm under the internal potency. Otherwise, orders are coming through the modes of material nature. Enjoy this. Eat this. Have sex with that. That's another direction of orders. That's, we follow those dictates, the dictates of lust and greed and anger, then we're under the control of the external force, and we receive orders. And although we protest, we are controlled by a higher power, and we grow old, we become diseased, and we die. Those are all under control of material nature that causes us. So we follow the orders. That's control. We can't put it off. People say they have to sometimes, but they use a euphemism of answering the call of nature. They have to answer. It's the demand of nature. In so many ways, they're enslaved to. So, penance is the internal potency of the Lord, is not there. So, austerity means follow the order of Krishna. That's what's meant by austerity. And he says, such acts of internal potency are exhibited by non-attachment from material enjoyment. The living entities are engaged in a condition of material bondage because of their propensity for overlordship. By engagement in the devotional service of the Lord, one becomes detached from this enjoying spirit. So that's the cause of our enslavement, this enjoying spirit, with the notion of actually becoming the Lord, lording it over. So when one surrenders to Krishna through devotional service, this enjoying propensity goes away. Maya is always trying to tempt us to enjoy. And so she's very expert at creating the illusion understand, as soon as we think that by engaging in some material activity, whether it's becoming wealthy, having sexual relationships, becoming famous, whatever that we're attracted to, that yes, if I have this situation, I'll become happy. We should know right away if this is a lie. Something should tell us. As soon as that usually starts as a fantasy, and projecting on the screen of the mind is this, like a television commercial, it says, you will enjoy this way, and you will enjoy that way. We will probably all fantasy, but now in the form of television commercials. Because that's what we learn. And just as we should be trained, when you see a television commercial, no, it's a lie. Anytime it's advertising, you should just understand right away it's a lie. The purpose of advertising is not to tell you the truth. And you see these advertisements for Pepsi Cola, and these people are converging on the beach or something, and drinking this drink and gets the ecstasy. You know what that means to do that for you. Cocaine. A little more than that, Coca-Cola. But whatever they do, you know, that they try to suggest is by taking this product, which is perfect and wonderful, then you'll achieve all happiness. It's a lie. So whatever, in the same way, sometimes there's an effort in grade school to train children to understand the commercials and lies. It's all advertising. So similarly, any time there's a fantasy of enjoying material nature, we should immediately understand this is a lie. It's been set by my trap. And if we become engage in devotional service and we'll become detached from that fantasy. We'll see it for what it is. And we'll not be attracted. We won't be fooled, we'll be tricked by material nature or with this illusion of the office of enjoyment. A little while ago, we had Prabhupada quote from the first one. Same word is there, tapa. Endless. But here in this context, it means suffering. Same word. Penance, austerity means suffering. Bhakti yoga means the voluntary acceptance of some penance. But in the material world also, it's the word for suffering. So it says that in the material world, that lada, pleasure, Krishna has vadini shakti, the pleasure potency, the Srimadhu Radharani in the spiritual world. But when that pleasure potency becomes exhibited in the material world, it becomes mixed. And so lada tapakari, that enjoyment in the material world is the cause of all misery. So it's a trick. This enjoyment causes all suffering. So Prabhupada says here. So you may think that we have to engage in some suffering to perform devotional service. We're depriving our senses of sense gratification and they're crying like spoiled rats for their toys. And just like when a child has a temper tantrum, you just have to ignore them. Senses when you have commands, and then we have the drink, what they enjoy, a cigarette, whatever you've been addicted to, and one simply has to take a look and go on the screen and think to yourself. So that's suffering also. But in any case, that suffering is there. One way or another, because a lot of that suffering, that suffering will be there in the material world also. Birth, death, away, these are all suffering. So many ways. The whole material world is an ingenious contrivance for various forms of suffering. So that suffering will be there. And that suffering to no purpose. At least if we suffer in Krishna consciousness, the suffering is so to purpose. It's not that we purchase immunity from suffering by engaging in sense gratification. He is the Prabhupada says here, one cannot enjoy material illusory prosperity. He desires to return home back to God. One who has no information of the transcendental bliss in the association of the Lord foolishly desires to enjoy this temporary material happiness. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that if someone sincerely wants to see the Lord and at the same time wants to enjoy this material world, he is considered to be a fool. One who wants to remain here in the material world for material enjoyment has no business entering into the eternal kingdom of God. The Lord favors such a foolish devotee. Or maybe many of us are foolish, thinking, yes, I want to go back to God, and at the same time, I want to enjoy this material world. That's called foolish devotee. The Lord favors such foolish devotee by snatching all that he may possess in the material world. That's why so many of us are poor. If our reaction to this state of poverty is to get rich again, so Prabhupada describes what happens if this is our reaction. If such a foolish devotee of the Lord tries to recoup his position, in fact, then the merciful Lord again snatches away all that he may have possessed. But he's persistent. By such repeated failures of material prosperity, he becomes very unpopular with his family members and friends. In the material world, the family members and friends honor persons who are very successful in accumulating wealth by any means. They don't care how you got it. They don't like to look too closely. That's okay. The foolish devotee of the Lord is thus put into forcible penance by the grace of the Lord, and at the end the devotee becomes perfectly happy being engaged in the service of the Lord. Therefore, penance and devotional service of the Lord, either by voluntary or by being forced by the Lord, is necessary for attaining perfection, and thus penance is the internal potency of the Lord. That's nice. 2:9:23. Of course, we can also have money if we use it in Krishna's service. But when we start to become greedy for our own sense gratification, Krishna snatches it. Then Prabhupada goes on, continues the purport in the next verse. Krishna says, I create this cosmos by such penance, I'm maintained by the same energy, and I withdraw it all by the same energy. Therefore, the potential power is penance alone. Here, Krishna's power is actually penance. his own power. It's his internal focus of accomplishing of everything. So Prabhupada, the purport of this verse, Prabhupada sort of continued with the last thing he taught. In executing penance, one must be determined to return home back to Godhead. And one must decide to undergo all types of tribulations for that end, troubles. And he points out, he says, even for material prosperity, name and fame, one has to undergo severe types of penance. Otherwise, no one can become an important figure in this material world. Why then are there severe types of penance for the perfection of devotional service? An easygoing life and attainment of perfection and transcendental realization cannot go together. So when we are all being recruited to lead a strenuous life, not an easy life, the Lord, Prabhupada says, is more clever than any living entity. Therefore, he wants to see how painstaking the devotee is in devotional service. That's what he wants to see. Not just that we have this desire, oh yeah, sure, I might go back to God, you have to wait for the time. But Krishna wants to see that we actually desire. That's why Prabhupada said that we have to follow the way of the principles. If we do not follow the way of the principles, where is the proof that we love Krishna? If we love Krishna, we follow his orders. Otherwise, Prabhupada's word is sentimental. He talks about being sentimentalist. He said, yes, I love Krishna. Nice sentiment about Krishna, but that doesn't result in anything real. So actual love means to follow his heart. So he wants to see how painstaking the devotee is in devotional service. Painstaking, Prabhupada uses this word nicely. To take pains, and also maybe to hurt a little bit. Take pains, be very careful and determined. The Lord is more clever than any living entity. He wants to see how painstaking the devotee is in devotional service. The orders received from the Lord, either directly or to the bona fide spiritual master, and to execute that order, however painstaking, is the severe type of penance. This is what Prabhupada defines as penance. Follow the order of the spiritual master. No matter how things are. One who follows the principle rigidly is sure to achieve success in attaining the first person. And we have the example of Prabhupada's own life. And he said, the secret of success in spiritual life is to discharge the order of the spiritual master. And so Prabhupada himself took great pains to do that when he was 17 years old. Discharge that order, coming to the United States all by himself, without much hope of success, with no money. He did it. And then everything was there because he worked like that. So we can see, Prabhupada speaking from experience. And we see the Lord Rama. So all the acharyas show us the same thing by their actions. So it's clear this is the way back to Godhead. And we have to sit down every day to preach to the mind. Understand that we're here because we want to go back to Godhead. Otherwise, there's so many other institutions doing so many other things. But the purpose of this institution is to bring people back to God. That's why we're here. Therefore, we're also committed to various ways of going about it, authorized ways of going about it, we should be taking up with it and working very hard, taking pain. And then we execute the devotional service according, just according to the process that Prabhupada uses. We don't have to get very complicated in our mind what it is. Very well known. It only gets complicated when we try to avoid it. Therefore, we have to make up some theory. Why can perform the devotional service like this, like that? Then it gets complicated. But if we're just simple and accept the order as it comes down, then there's no problem. We'll go back on back to that and bring many other results. Question? Knowledge develops, and the most goodness.